What are the seeds of genius? In the case of one remarkable little boy, it may have been in the form of a very humble and unexceptional upright piano built in Canada during a golden age of piano building in this country. Well, that little boy, of course, was Glenn Gould.
Well, happy September 25th. Today is the 86th anniversary of the birth of Glenn Gould. I'm Brian Levine. I'm the executive director of the Glenn Gould Foundation. And today marks a very special day as well. It is the very first official Glenn Gould Day in the city of Toronto. Last year, in honor of Glenn's 85th birthday, the City Council of Toronto proclaimed every subsequent September 25th Glenn Gould Day. And we thought that this would be a special time to celebrate something truly remarkable. For all of those of you in Canada, in the United States, and around the world who are lovers and admirers of Glenn Gould, his legacy, and his music, we have a great discovery brought to light for the very first time. And to help us with this, I'm joined on my right, your left, by Heather Tucker and her sister, Susan Rayner, and they've come in from out of town to explain exactly what this incredible object is behind us. And without making wait any longer, this is Glenn Gould's first piano. The piano that he learned on his mother's lap how to play on, and it has come to us through an incredibly generous donation by Heather and Susan, who wanted it to have a good home, so they've entrusted it to the Glenn Gould Foundation. And what's even more remarkable than the instrument itself is Heather and Sue's family history. So I'm going to actually turn the platform over to you now that people know what this incredible beast is here.
Out of tune.
This Dominion piano. Heather, Sue, why don't you tell us the story of the instrument and your family and their relationship with Glenn Gould and his parents?
Well, I think we could start with Mom meeting Mrs. Gould through her choir as a teenager. This was in the early, the pre-war war years during the Depression. Mm-hmm. And my mom loved choral music. She loved her choir, and she often, you know, said the 30s were a time of such want, but it was just so rich with music, and she and her friends just loved the choir. And Mrs. Gould was her choir director. And through that, they just developed a special friendship and a special bond. And Mrs. Gould loved Mom, and Mom loved Mrs. Gould. And I don't know if it was the same with all of the choir members, but Mrs. Gould would invite Mom to her home. My mom just loved going for tea and conversations. And so in the early 30s, when she went to their home on Southwood Drive, Glenn would be sitting on Mrs. Gould's knee, reaching out for the notes and the piano. But, you know, whenever I held my children at a piano, it would be banging, but never Glenn. He would be reaching out and discovering. She always described it as discovering music. And during those visits, she would see Glenn as a baby and then a toddler, and just his developing his love for music in those years. So that's how it began.
Yeah, amazing. Now I should jump in and say that in those days, well, when you came along a little later, you were not Rayners and Tuckers; you were Mortons.
Right. Yes.
Right. So your parents' names were
Lewis and Pearl Morton.
Right. Lewis and Pearl Morton. So Pearl really sort of was taken under Florence Gould's wing.
Yes.
As a kind of a friend, a younger protege in music, as someone he just became very close to her because she had a big heart and she welcomed people into her home, united by music, right?
Yes. And Mom's home life was somewhat, let's call it chaotic. There was a big family and conflicts and, it was just chaotic, and she just loved the solitude and the peace and quiet of the Mrs. Gould's home, and She always felt welcome there. Yeah. And Mrs. Gould would say, come on down, you know, let's take Glenn out for a walk. Let's see if we can get him out of the house. And so Mrs. Gould enjoyed those walk times, but my mom just loved those times.
Yeah. So the way it's been described, once Glenn was introduced to the piano, he didn't want to leave it ever, right?
No. Yeah.
And, you know, we symbolically have his later chair here, and there's a connection to the family through that.
Mm-hmm.
But in, you know, hopefully, you know, Glenn's spirit is somewhere in the room and he's not going to object or interrupt, but he's actually, you know, being quite well behaved at the moment.
Yeah.
But please, you know, tell us a little more about that.
Well, Heather has the oral history because she was the last one, the youngest, the last one home. So she would be with Mom as Mom aged, and she was sharing her memory. So she would share with you the first trips to Mrs. Gould's, or taking me as a baby, or Larry as a 4 or a 5 year old.
That's your brother.
Yeah, my brother Larry. He was 4 years older than me, and he was born when Dad was overseas. So Mom was young at home with a baby, and she had been in Mrs. Gould's choir with her girlfriends, and so they had this relationship. And Mom would share with Heather stories of going down to Mrs. Gould's and Glenn touching the piano and just... And then when I went as a baby, I don't remember it, but Mom shared it with Heather, that I would sit just beside Glenn's chair while he was playing, and he would be, what, 14 or 15?
No.
When I was...
Teenager.
Yeah.
By this point, I'm probably a grand piano. Because,
yes.
You know, he was...
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I think this was at the cottage at that time, but yeah.
I would say the late 30s, this went to the cottage and stayed there.
Yeah. And I was born in 47, so that year, I don't remember what piano he was playing, but I think this was at the cottage.
Yeah.
And I would sit and listen to him, and Larry would be off with the dog and running around playing, and Glenn would be sitting playing, and I would just be enthralled.
Mm-hmm.
And Mom said he just loved having me sit on the floor. But of course, I'm a baby, I don't remember this. And those were the oral stories that Mom shared with Heather as she started to age. And
or Susan crawling over and pulling herself up to stand with the piano bench and just
now your
listening.
Folks were from a different neighborhood, and there was a little bit of a disparity in social standing between your folks and the Goulds, right?
There definitely was. We were from I wouldn't call it the other side of the tracks, but definitely the blue-collar neighborhoods in Scarborough, and my dad from Toronto. And again, this is oral history, so we've tried to piece together where everybody met. And we're pretty sure Dad met the Goulds on Lake Simcoe, because my dad's family had a cottage there. So we're pretty sure that's where the connection started.
Sure.
And as far as we know, from the stories Mom and Dad told, Mom and Dad met up at Lake Simcoe.
Oh.
So, and Mom has pictures of her choir girls up there having, you know, saying it was the best times of her life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if it was a Christian camp she used to go to or the Gould's Cottage, but Lake Simcoe was the sort of the nexus of where everybody met.
Right.
And before they got married, Dad was in a working class, very small, semi-detached houses. In Toronto, Mom was in Scarborough, and right in between them was Southwood Drive. And so if Mr. Gould needed a hand with something, Lou, can you give me a hand with something? Because my dad, to me as a little girl, but still as an adult, was the strongest man on the planet. He was just a strong, strong man. And a helper. Like, he would help anybody with anything, and Mr. Gould would call him for a hand, and that's where the connection with the piano started with my dad.
We really have to kind of turn our minds back to, you know, Toronto is a very post-Victorian orange kind of town. You know, Temperance on Sundays, you know.
Yes,
you can get a
everything's
drink,
closed on Sunday.
You know, movie theaters closed down.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things we inherited from the Victorians was a very rigid class system. So, you know, being a working man, someone who worked with his hands.
Yes.
Would have somewhat separated your dad from Bert Gould, who had his own business.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, you know, as a furrier, he would work with his hands, it was presumably working in more luxurious
gentlemen,
goods.
And, yes.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
In the fine apparel trade. So So yeah. That was a bit of a gulf, but you know, it sounds as though the Goulds really didn't make distinctions of that kind. They were just completely warm and welcoming.
Always had seemed to have such a mutual respect for each other, which my mom cherished that relationship, but my dad did as well. It was really special for him to have that.
That
mutual respect.
So let's talk about, you alluded to the fact that this instrument, this poor instrument, which by the way looked a little different in those days than it does today.
Yes. Been through the wards.
It's had a number of things done to it, including refinishing. So we know of at least two photographs that we believe are of this instrument, and it has a much darker case.
Almost black.
Black in the kind of deep mahogany hues, again, of the Victorians. But this instrument was a bit of a traveler in its day, right?
Yes. And on the refinishing line, I'll mention that Susan remembered Jesse Grieg's initials naughtily carved into the back of the piano. But unfortunately, they were refinished out and
the member of
sanded
his family
down.
That Glenn was closest to, other than his mother, Jessie Green.
Yes.
His cousin, yes.
Had, and so Susan remembers, you know, as she was practicing on it, seeing Jesse's, but they're sadly they're gone, but not the memory of them.
Yes, not the memory and not the name of the maker. Mm. It probably became considerably degraded through the refinishing process, but we can tell that it's a Dominion piano, and you know the Dominion was based in Bowmanville, Ontario. We'll get a little bit into that history, but let's talk about the travels.
So my dad would tell me, all of us, but
really,
especially
me,
stories about Friday nights, and this was, as far as we can piece together, this had to be maybe 1937, 38, pre-war years for sure. So Mr. Gould would call my dad and say, "Lou, Glenn won't go to the cottage without his piano. Can you give me a hand?" So Dad said I'd just drop what I was doing and head down to the Goulds, and we would load this piano onto the trailer. And he said I'd put a tarp over it, and I'd tie it down and triple tie it down so it was, you know, good and steady. And, you know, they would pull away to go up to the cottage. And Dad said he would just see Glenn looking out the back window like, "Is it safe? Is it secure? Is everything there?" And he would just watch them till they're gone. And I said to Dad, I said, "Well, what on earth did they do when they got up to Lake Simcoe?" Yeah. I mean, he says, "Far as I know, Glenn lifted the tarp and serenaded the trees. Then they put the tarp back on and brought it back home." And I asked him, I said, "How many times did you do that?" And he said, "I don't know. Too many. Too many for the piano, too many for me." Yeah. But then it was decided that Glenn had a piano at home. It would just stay up there for the season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think it came back and forth once for a season, and then it just stayed up there because he had a better instrument at home, something more suitable to his talent. So it stayed at the cottage, as far as we know, till 1954 or 55.
It's remarkable that this instrument had such a formative influence, because, you know, we have a picture of Glenn on his grandmother's knee at this piano, and there's a picture of Glenn sitting at the piano himself as, I would say probably a three and a half, 4 year old. And it's unmistakably this instrument, although it looks darker.
Yes, for sure.
And the keys look a little different. It also has had its keys changed along the way.
The ivories
were taken off.
But,
you
know, blessings upon you. You actually saved them.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though we don't trade or truck in ivory, these are the actual ivories that were removed when the piano was refinished, I presume. Glenn's baby fingers.
Yeah. Touched.
Touched, caressed, and how he first became acquainted with, you know, the little preludes and fugues of Bach and little scale exercises. Yeah.
And was Heather said, Mom shared with her that he would be sitting on Mrs. Gould's knee, and he would just be touching him and then listening to the aftertones.
Yeah.
And he just...
Amazing. She remembered that as a toddler, too, him standing and very gingerly touching it and just waiting there. And Mom said for her, the notes and the after notes had disappeared, but obviously not for Glenn. He would still be his head cocked to it till he got the very last tail end of it.
And
I love that picture. Just love that picture of him.
It's so great.
Bending over and just listening and being so gentle with the piano. Yeah. It's amazing.
So your paths finally crossed with Glenn, too.
And I had to go back and look, well, how old was I exactly? And I found an old recital, adjudicator's report in 54. So I thought I was six when I started lessons.
Right.
And Mom asked Mrs. Gould if she would give me piano lessons. And she said yes, but I had a paper keyboard on the kitchen table. So I'd go for my lessons, I'd come home and I'd practice on this paper keyboard. And then I would get to the Goulds and think, oh, is this wonderful? So that was in 54.
54.
And then in 55, Dad bought the piano from the Goulds. And it was moved into our front room and I had a real piano too.
Amazing.
To practice on it. I just assumed it was Mom's mom and Dad's piano.
Right. Later, you made a little discovery about what's inside the piano.
Yes.
So, I'll show you where it is, folks. But if you open the lid, and there you can see what the original label looked like. This is to certify that this piano is hereby warranted for a term of 10 years from the date of its manufacture, and should be... and should the instrument prove proper care and use prove defective in material workmanship within that time, it is hereby agreed to put it in good repair at our factory or replace it
with we need that repairman
style. The Dominion Piano the Dominion Organ and Piano Company Limited, Bowmanville, Ontario. But if you look beyond that, inside there is an inscription to Susan from Glenn Gould, with best wishes, 1955.
Yeah.
With his signature.
July 1955. Yeah. We didn't discover that until 1990.
Yeah, around then. Yeah.
And this is serial number 18107, just inscribed inside the instrument, and we'll be showing you that. But what a remarkable thing to see that, you know, remembered you, you know, even though he was by this time starting to perform around Canada and around the world, that he remembered you and signed off with his childhood piano when he went to you, to your family.
And that was when we discovered it signed over, inscribed to me. That's when Mom shared with Heather that Glenn would enjoy having me sit it on the floor and listen to him play or pull myself up on the piano stool. But Mom said, yeah, he'd just enjoy having Susan there and he would be playing. Larry would be off. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Amazing.
And later on, after Glenn was gone, your mother got a letter from Glenn's dad, Bert, attesting that this was the very first instrument that was Glenn's own piano.
Yes, and it was the one that went back and forth to the cottage numerous times.
Yeah. Yeah. And that part, I just love that his dad and my dad would support an almost a ridiculous request to I need to go to the cottage, but I can't go without my piano. Most parents would say, you know, the sand buckets is all we're packing. But these two men would struggle because it's a heavy, well, you know, it's a heavy
this is about an 800 pound instrument. This is made the good old-fashioned
And there may have been other neighbors, I don't know, but my my dad moved that piano. I saw him move that piano. And but even the structure of the Gould's house, trying to visualize how they did that.
Yeah,
he was pretty smart with ramps and pulleys and stuff. Yeah. Like, he could do that. But that they would do that is just, I think, wonderful that they supported
him. And your dad ended up working for the Toronto Hydro, right?
Yes, he did.
Well, from the war.
Yeah. And he was in the war, and he was wounded during the war. So he fought with distinction for the Canadian forces abroad. He was in, was he in Italy?
He was in Italy, France, and Holland. He worked with that, actually, the underground in Holland. We're very proud of him for that.
With the underground, that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. We have some letters from the Hague. Right.
And a couple of times he was wounded and went back into service.
Yes, he did. He stayed with his...
Was he wounded three times?
Three times, and he stayed with his unit.
He would go to the rehab, the hospital in London and in England, and then he would be back.
If it had been me after the second time, I'd have figured that someone was trying to send me a message.
He was, he was in a tank.
He was a tank driver.
Tank driver. When I went to the War Museum and looked inside the tank at this little metal seat in this... how awful for these soldiers. How they would be sitting down there, and somebody would be above him, and looking at this little...
Not designed for comfort at all.
And at the same time, our mama's... new bride.
Yes.
You know, she's pregnant. She has my brother while my dad's away.
Was he three? He was three.
And she was living with her parents. She had moved back with her parents in a very, you know, lots of brothers and sisters and chaos. And Mrs. Gould supported her through the war. Like she, Mom said, I don't know what I would have done. And she would say, put Larry in the stroller, bring him down, we'll take Glenn out for a walk. Well, of course, Glenn is never, but as my brother grew, he loved the dogs. Yeah. Yeah. He just, that was his.
And your own recollections of Glenn when you were old enough? You know, he was already a young man by that
point. Oh, right. I heard stories from Mom. Oh, you're so privileged to be taking lessons from Mrs. Gould. And she would tell me about her son and, you know, all of his experience at that Royal Conservatory and how he astounded everybody. And I just pictured this little boy. And I would go for my lessons and I thought, well, why is this little boy never at home? Like, you know, where is this little boy? I'd like to meet him. I was 6, 7 years old. And one day he came home for lunch while I was there. I thought, he's a man. He was like in his 20s. And I thought, all in his dark coat and his over his shoulders. And he was had a hat on. And he was just a big, dark man. I was shocked. I was expecting this little boy.
But you were invited to have lunch with
him. Oh, yeah. I was there for lunch.
Genius.
And he came in for lunch. And he sat down at the table and talked to his mom. And then he was humming at the table and drumming his fingers. And Mrs. Gould said, Glenn, don't hum at the table. And he'd stop. And sit up straight, and he'd sit up straight, and a few seconds later, he'd be humming again, and his fingers would be, and he'd be, Glenn, sit up and don't come at the table. And I was 7 years old, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh. I won't ever hum at the table.
But Glenn did.
So that was my first encounter with Glenn.
But obviously, you know, the attention that he paid when he was practicing made an impression on him. Obviously, he signed the instrument to you. And I understand that after a particular misadventure, you got a personal postcard from Rob.
I did. And we look back to see, you know, when would this have been? And it went maybe 57, I guess it was. And my friend and I ran away from home with the Red Skelton show, Freddie the Freeloader. And she had a fight with her mother. And she came over to me and she said, I'm running away. Will you come with me? I thought, oh, sure. Yeah, I'll support you. So we gathered up stuff and off we went, got some treats at the corner store. And she had seen a couch and a chair in the city dump.
Oh, you were going to live in the dump.
We were going to live in the dump.
You were going to be Freddie the Freeloader.
It's living in the dump. And we got there and it was getting dark. And we got close to this old couch and this chair. And I thought, I'm not sitting on that. I'm not sleeping in that bed, sitting on that couch, and it's getting dark and cold. And I thought, we should go home. She was mad at her mother, and she didn't want to go home. And I said, well, you know, I think I could find Mrs. Gould's house from here, because I used to come here for my lessons, and let's go to Mrs. Gould's. So she said, okay. So it must have been 10 or 11 o'clock at night. We showed up on Mrs. Gould's front door. These two little girls, 57, so I'd be 9 or 10 years old, knocked on the door, and she came to the door and she thought, what? We said, we've run away from home. And she looked around for Mom and Dad like they were playing a joke on her. She said, oh, they're not here. Oh, come in. So she invited us in. She gave us the milk and cookies and called Mom and Dad. And they had search parties out for us all over the place because we had been gone since before supper, and this was 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
So she called Mom, Dad came to get us, home we went. And I guess she must have written to Glenn or talked to him on the phone. And about a week or so later, I got a postcard. I think it was from Vienna. And it was Franz Liszt. And he said, I hear you run away and you're trying to join me on tour, but you're going to have some growing up to do. So you better stay home and just, you know, wait a while to join me. This wonderful postcard. Mom said, now that's a treasure. Put it somewhere safe. So I folded it and I put it in a box and I kept it in my dresser drawer. And Mom said, it better be somewhere safer than that in case we have a fire. Yeah. Well, I put it in a very safe place. And I don't know where.
So safe that it has never gone missing, but it is missing.
But it was Franz Liszt. I can picture his writing the message because I would read it over and over
again.
Well,
if it was Vienna, we had a pretty good idea of when during the year that would have been, because it would have been after his Russia tour, which I think was in March or May, I can't remember which, but and he went to Vienna after that for the Vienna Festival, which would have been in the summer, sometime like June, So
still cool, but
we can consult our authorities and come up with the exact date. But isn't that incredible? You know, the Goldberg Variations had been released. He's suddenly catapulted to international stardom. Yeah. He's, you know, won over the Russian audiences, and they're in love with him. He goes off to Berlin first and performs with Herbert von Karajan, and the Berlin Philharmonic, and Karajan falls in love with him. He goes to Vienna and conquers Vienna, and he finds time to write a postcard to you.
Yes, to a little girl. Yes,
it's just amazing.
It says something about his, his humor and his character.
He also wrote postcards to his dog. So,
oh well,
you ran after my own heart.
Yeah.
So before we finish, and there's more, and I'm happy to say that the two of you have joined forces to collect your reminiscences in a written form, and we're going to be publishing those in a series of installments, which will be appearing on the Glenn Gould Foundation's website, starting in about 10 days from the time you all see this. And it'll stretch out for about a month, so we'll have the installments and have some beautiful photographs that you shared with us from your family. But before I leave, this, of course, is one of the most iconic symbols of Glenn. It's, you know, come to be a symbol of his unique genius, his eccentricity, and the sheer physical discomfort that he must have experienced in making music. But this is a replica of his one and only chair. And I understand that your dad had a hand in the creation of this, too.
It was, yes.
So, and Heather, why don't you share that with us?
Again, my dad shared this with me, and dad was not really one to talk a lot about himself. And I didn't realize the importance of this chair at the time when he was telling me, but he told me of a time when Mr. Gould called him and said, "Lou, Glenn needs a chair, you know, a special height, shorter, needs to adjust. Can you help me out?" So again, I don't know if Mr. Gould came to my dad's workshop, which was equipped with anything you would need to make something, or whether he threw his tools in the truck and went down. But he told me, you know, that he helped Mr. Gould cut a chair from the bridge set they had, I believe, down to the height he needed, and put like a bracket on it so it could, you know, shift around so he could sit on it. And Dad never thought much about it because it's something he did for everybody. Yeah. If he needed a hand with something, my dad would know how to do it. And then as I grew up, I thought, my dad helped Mr. Gould cut down his chair and adjust it. And then just the knowledge of Glenn carrying that chair everywhere with him.
Everywhere.
And I just, you know, wanted to be able to tell my dad, "Dad, do you know where that chair is?"
Be amazed.
Because it was, you know, he's done so much for so many people, but he helped. Yeah, you know, Mr. Gould figure out how to make the chair work for Glenn. Yep.
Well, you know, Glenn said in a famous TV program that he made with the French director and violinist Bruno Mal-Sajon, "This is a boon companion. It travels with me everywhere. Without it, I cannot function." And then he went on to say that he'd sooner part with the music of Bach than this chair. So that's pretty special. And they put major testaments to the intersection of your two families. And it sounds as though your recollection, both of your own folks, is as wonderful, loving people, but also of the Goulds being that way, too.
Yeah, absolutely. They were. Loved being with the Goulds. I just love Mrs. Gould. Mr. Gould, it was just a treat to be at their home.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like an honored guest.
And their cottage, they would take. But my brother and my sister went to their cottage,
and it was usually before a recital or an exam. I would go for the weekend, so I have some peace and quiet to practice.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I would practice, but I'd rather be out playing,
making, of course,
you know, games of the imagination or whatever. But you know, we'd always spend time practicing at the cottage, and
then this instrument came from the cottage and became your own instrument.
Yeah, that was in the front room for
when I guess he got the chikring at the cottage, which would have been the piano when Susan was going up there. Would be there.
Yes, the chikring came into Gould's possession in 1955, which is coincidentally the date.
Yeah,
that you acquired this. So I'm guessing that, alas, a new love took possession of his heart.
Yeah.
And this little girl basically had to find a new home. And
I'm just amazed.
Enjoyed a lot of
home. And I think it was $35 Dad paid for the piano.
I think Dad's going to pay $35 for it, which would have been a lot for
and
Dad to
pay. I think Mr. Gould would have given it to him for all the help, but, you know, it was important to Dad to buy the piano for me. And
oh, is that special?
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that this is, for me, a tremendous birthday treat. And this is actually an incredible piece of the Gould legacy, a question mark filled in, because like many people who've seen early pictures of Glenn, I've seen the pictures of Glenn at the upright piano, both the one on his grandmother's knee and the one of him sitting at an upright piano, and thinking, well, what was that? And it's unmistakably, because you can see later pictures of him at a grand or baby grand, it's in the same room. You can see the same wallpaper, sometimes the same length. So you were left wondering, what was this? And now, thanks to you, the mystery is solved. And we will definitely take good care of the instrument. And believe me, it needs it. After the life that it's had, being carted back and forth on a trailer, bump, bump, bump along the highway.
And a tarp.
And some years that have passed since you stopped playing the piano regularly. But we now know that this, ladies and gentlemen, before you, is Glenn's very first piano.
Yes.
Thanks to you, Heather and Sue. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And look forward to the stories, which are filled in some additional detail and some more information about Bert and Florence and about Glenn, which will be appearing on our website, www.glennbull.ca. Thank you so much for this.
Well, we're so happy the foundation has.
And we just say thank you to the Glenn Gould Foundation, because we have been trying to find a home for this piano. We know it's a treasure. And so many people have said, Glenn who? I've not believed the story. Or just said it's not worth anything. And it's like, we're just so thankful for the work that the foundation does in keeping Glenn's legacy alive.
To find you through the book club, right?
Yes, and that it's found that you've made room for it in your congested space here. We appreciate that.
Well, you know, as they say, it kind of brings the room together.
Absolutely, and Glenn on top, I think, is just enjoying the journey on it.
You know, there's the Glenn Gould Prize.
Yes.
And there's Glenn walking along
the keys.
But I tell you that that this is a prize in itself. And, you know, as a musical instrument among the great thoroughbreds, obviously it doesn't stand up, but as a piece of living history, it is priceless. So thank you again.
Well, we're so happy that you have it, that we found you and that you treasure it.
Absolutely mutual.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
The Glenn Gould Foundation is a registered Canadian charity, and we rely on the support of arts lovers like you to keep bringing inspiring stories to life. Please consider giving by visiting our website, glenngould.ca, and follow us across social media at the Glenn Gould Foundation. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of The Gould Standard.